Welcome back to the Relatively Damaged podcast by Damaged Parents. Today we have Carol Bannon with us. She lost her husband 4.5 years ago. She's gone on a transformational journey from grief to joy along the way, unpacking unresolved grief from the loss of her sister, leaving her 36-year career as a physical therapist and becoming a life coach. She has created the Joyful Life Blueprint for midlife women ready to move from feeling empty and loss to creating an epic next chapter, and is now adding in grief coaching to help others through this challenging and painful time so that they can see the possibilities of joy in their life again. You can find Carol at carolbannons.com.
Hey everyone, Angela Talent here, host of the Relatively Damaged podcast. I'm the author of Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. As you may know, Cicero once said, a room without books is like a body without a soul. Well, I say a soul without poetry hasn't lived. Buy my book on Amazon, Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent.
Do you feel like a meditation failure? I know I did until I tried the iOS Breath and Heart app put together by the good people over at the Institute for Applied Meditation. I kept hearing about the benefits of meditation and was frustrated because I just couldn't sit there noticing my breath for any length of time. Thank goodness there's more than one type of meditation. I'm so glad this worked for me. Will it work for you? I don't know. Download the app and try it out. Breath and Heart from I Am Heart. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Angela. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason you had come on, number one, you've got an amazing story. I mean, it had to have been a struggle to move from physical therapy to coaching, but losing a husband.
Yeah.
I mean, were you guys married? How long ago did you meet? What's the story?
He was my second husband and we were together for 16 years, only married for 4. He was a jazz pianist. So music was a very big part of our lives because I play the piano, and he got sick in 2012 with lung cancer. And then the last 6 years of his life were very much dealing with that. And, you know, you're better, you're not better. And the cancer journey that one has. And at the same time, I was dealing with a mother in England who was not doing well and a friend with Alzheimer's. So there was a lot going on all at the same time. But yes, it was, of course, it was terrible. It was very difficult, even though we knew it was going to happen. And this, I think this is what surprised me. We were ready. We knew. He knew. I knew. We'd done all the preparations, and yet it hit me like a ton of bricks. I had no idea. Mm. I had zero idea.
Now, did it hit you the day he died, or did it hit you a little bit later? What was that process like for you?
That is such an interesting question, because no, it did. I mean, yes, the day he died, yes. And yet the 2 weeks, it was almost 2 weeks till his funeral. And I thought, oh, I'm doing pretty well here. Wow, this is okay. I'm doing well. And then the moment the funeral had stopped, crash, it all came back. You know, it all happened. And the sheer physicality of it surprised me. The exhaustion, mm-hmm. the getting out of bed, the tiredness, the cognitive issues. Not, I read a lot. I love reading. I couldn't read an article or a newspaper. I would, you know, a couple of sentences and I'm like, yeah, that's good. I couldn't focus. So, you know, I'd love us to sort of talk about grief, because going back to my sister, I was 9. Was I 8? I was 9. And my sister died. She was just 21. She was a physical therapist. She fell off a mountain. And my father said,
Hold on.
Yeah.
Was she also you said she was a physical therapist and then she fell off a mountain. So was she also a mountain climber?
She was. I was lucky. I was the youngest. I never got hauled up the mountains, but my father pulled all the other kids up mountains and she loved it. She absolutely loved it. And it was about a week after Christmas. It was January the 6th. And they came around and said, your daughter's died. And the only thing my parents ever said to me was, Susie's died. She's fallen off a mountain. Mm. We didn't have a funeral. We didn't have a remembrance service. We had nothing, no conversation. And I was young. My sister was about 16. My brother was older than that. So he was, you know, probably in his 20s. Nothing. We did nothing. It's like, and I understand that the grief affects us in so many different ways, doesn't it? And some people just bottle it up and shut it down. And I cannot imagine losing a child, being a mother. I can't imagine it. But to not talk about this beautiful spirit that she was, you lose the memory of them. And I think that's so sad. And I think it's something that we never really dealt with. And it affected my mother tremendously, of course, because there was a lot of joy in the house after that. How do you feel joy after that? And how do you feel joy if you don't go through the grief?
That was going to be my question. How do you get back to it? And, you know, I think for me, I have wanted to run away from those feelings before. Mm-hmm. And I would think that's what I need to do. Oh, just, you know, and let it, and that's not letting it go. Running away from it is not letting it go. I have come up with this belief that somehow I have to walk through the fire of those emotions.
I think you do. I'm English. We didn't talk about emotions. We never really discussed it.
Yeah.
Excuse me again.
No worries. I have found for me sometimes when emotions, sometimes talking about things, you know, for some reason I'll get a little tug in my throat. Especially if I'm on a podcast and something hits and...
Isn't it interesting? Because as a physical therapist, you know, and doing craniosacral therapy, this is the avenue of expression.
The avenue of expression is what you're calling it. Well, yep. Because doesn't the vagus nerve travel through the throat? And this is like the most compressed area, right?
Yes, yes.
So look, we're tying all this together.
I know. It is fascinating. But going back to emotions, when you've grown up in a sort of keep calm and carry on type of atmosphere, which is very English and stoic and stiff upper lip, you don't really let things get to you. And so when my husband died, and I knew it was coming, and I thought I was grieving, I'm aware enough, I meditate and do mindfulness, I thought I was aware enough that I was dealing with it quite well. But I wasn't. I went back to work very quickly, 3 days after his funeral. Silly, because then you have to, especially as a physio, I was looking after patients with chronic pain, I had to be present for them. And so I shoved it down so I could just get through the day. And I'd come home and I was absolutely exhausted. I sat for a year. I'd get home and I'd watch Netflix and I could barely move, actually. I'd never felt exhaustion. And it gave me a lot more empathy for concussion patients who'd say, I haven't got anything in me. And I'd think, oh, pace your activities. And then there I am sitting there thinking, yeah, pacing my activities might be shuffling the papers on the table, but a leaden body. And so grief sort of, you know, really infiltrated my physicality. Mm-hmm. And after about a year, I thought, well, okay, you're pretty young. You've got quite a lot of years left here, Carol. What are you going to do now? You know, something has to change because you don't want to be defined by this. I don't want to be defined as a widow. I don't want to stay here on the sofa for the next 30 years. Now what? And I started to look into purpose and joy, and I realized, I don't know what joy is. I've lost my joy. I don't know what brings me joy. And so that's when I started to really look into that a bit more.
And we go back to that real quick. I don't know what joy is. So what I had heard you say was, I don't know what joy is. And then I also heard you say I had lost my joy. So I'm thinking before the event of losing your husband, that you had some idea of what joy or what brought you joy. And afterwards, different.
It's interesting. Yeah. But I don't think I really did. I'd lost my joy, what little I had, because it was not, you know, we had loving parents. So there is no, you know, they dealt with their deep grief badly and with our grief badly because they didn't deal with it at all. But it was not one of those fun houses, you know, education was important, work ethic was very important. And my sister and I have talked about this. Yeah, it was not very joyful. It was not very much fun. So yeah, actually, I may have had a little joy, and my joy came from my children. My children always bring me joy, well, mostly, and, you know, animals and nature and friends. So there were things that brought me joy, but it was like I couldn't tap into it after Brian had died. You know, make a list of what makes you joyful. I couldn't. I was numb.
Yeah, so I think that that's actually really important to talk about, that numb feeling that happens. I think after any trauma mm-hmm. or loss, or any time where there's a grief that needs to happen, mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. grieving process,
yeah,
because in that moment, finding joy seems impossible.
It really does. It really yeah. does. And that's why I think, certainly for grief, they call it grief work. You have to go through it. You have to feel these feelings. And I think the problem was trying to push them away, trying to say, no, I'm fine. I'm good. How are you? Fine. Wish people wouldn't ask how you are when you're in grief. You're not fine, but you'll say fine, because, you know, they don't really want to know. Or they might, but it might be a hard thing for them to hear. So you push these emotions down. And what I learned after I did some grief counseling is that, well, when you push grief down, you numb one emotion out, you numb them all out. So it was no wonder if I was pushing grief down, I was also pushing joy down, but I didn't really realize that. So that's why it was so hard to find, so hard to tap into. And so I'm so sad for my mum and dad that they weren't able to talk about my sister, because it would have brought them eventually some gratitude for her light, for her personality, for who she was, for her gifts, even though it was a short life. And we need to move on to gratitude for what we have. And that was a big, big part for me for finding joy again, actually.
So did you start with like a gratitude practice daily? How did it start? You're in the middle of this sad, dark mm-hmm. hole where mm-hmm. you're not feeling emotions. So how did you start even thinking, I need to do this?
Luckily, I already did a gratitude journal. So that I was already attuned to gratitude, but not quite as much. I can remember sitting on the end of the bed thinking, oh, what's the point? What am I grateful for? And I'd look at the pictures of my children again, and I go, well, you know what? I'm really grateful for my kids. And then I'm in Canada. It gets cold in the winter. I'm really grateful for my warm house. I would just start with little things, and I made it a big practice to really, through the day, what can I be grateful for now? Is it my cup of tea? Is it the birds outside? Is it the sunshine through the windows? Practicing it, because the more you practice it, the more you find it. It helps. Yeah. It doesn't cover up the grief, but you're moving in a direction, a forward direction rather than a backward direction. And I think initially with the grief, we look back at somebody's life and our loss and how difficult it's going to be without them. And that's all true. And then there comes a point where we have to choose to live our lives now, and how are we going to do that moving forwards?
Okay, this is where I usually get a little confused, mm-hmm. right? And even in the midst of it, because I mean, yeah. I've had to go through my own struggles.
Yeah.
It's like, because like you were saying, you'd get up out of bed, and we need to feel the feelings, and then we also need to have gratitude. And then I hear you say, when I'm getting out of bed, I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. What can I find gratitude for? And I don't want to say that sounds like pushing it away. It's like, yes, I am sad, and I can also be grateful. Is it yes. kind of finding both of those at the
it
same
is.
Time?
It is. I absolutely would say that there's a duality to it. I think you can have both. As I mentioned, Brian was a jazz pianist, and he had lots of CDs. And it's only now, 4.5 years later, that I can listen to his music. And because initially when I tried to listen to it, I would have that duality of absolute joy of, oh, I love his music. Thank goodness we've got this legacy of music, and be in tears for the loss that he's not there. So I think you can have it. Yes, the getting out of bed is one of the most difficult things, I think, in grief. It's just, you want to curl up, you want to die, you just want to be there, pull the covers over your head and not get out. But I knew that was not a road to go down. I knew I, yes, there was a little forcing. Yeah, you have to get up. You do have to get up. And I wouldn't say the moment I got up, I was in gratitude. A little later, once I warmed up. But yes, it was challenging to do that.
Yeah, it is that first moment of getting up. You mm-hmm. know, I was just pondering that this morning. How do you get up and go when it's so hard to get up and go? And on some level, yeah, experiencing both at the same time. It's just one of those things that I think maybe until you get there, there's no way to clearly understand it.
I don't think so. Somebody actually suggested to me, and it was quite helpful, when you wake up, just write down in a journal how you're feeling. Again, almost accepting the thoughts, gosh, I miss him. Gosh, it's hard to get out of bed. All of the thoughts that are burbling in your mind, getting them down onto paper and don't read what you've written. I didn't read what I wrote for months and months. And then you look back and you think, wow, it's surprising you ever did get out of bed. But you do, because grief touches us all. We need to talk about it. And people do get up. People do go to work. People do move on. And we all have our own time frame. It's going to be different for everybody. So my grief journey is not going to be your grief journey or Sally's or John's. It's going to be different depending on our relationship with that person, where we're at, so many things, right? But I think it requires that work and that decision that, okay, well, now what?
Yeah.
Because you can't bring them back no matter how much you'd love to. You cannot. You have to give up all hope for a better past and a future with them because they're not coming. And it's heartbreaking that they're not there with you to share. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of it.
Yeah. I was thinking in those moments of getting, when you were getting out of bed, mm-hmm. was it, you know, with that pain, was it, I don't think easy is the right word, but I'm going to use it anyway. Was it easy to shift into, and I'm so grateful I had at least that time with him?
No, not initially, no. And especially the getting out of bed bit. I'm not really, I've never been a morning person. I'm working on it. So getting out of bed always feels like a struggle. But I would say later in the day, yes, I was able to sit there. I was able to look at a photo and think back and go, wow, all of these things. But momentarily, I mean, it really is. That is something that came a little later. I think it was easier to be grateful for other things around. I think you have to learn to honor their legacy. Actually, one of the things that I did do that I think was quite helpful for me is I made a CD of his last concert. We'd recorded his last concert. We'd listened to a few of the tunes and then he got very, very sick. And so I decided what I was going to do was make a CD out of this concert and send it to all his students and all his fans. And I, you know, so I did that. And that for me was sort of channeling my love for him, my memories for him into something I could share with others. And that was quite healing.
Yeah. So it sounds like every single person is going to have this different journey. Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally.
And it's because I don't know that, you know, like you were saying, John or Sally would have thought of, oh, I'm going to turn this and you know, share mm-hmm. this love that I yeah. have for them.
Yeah.
You know, because some people I think will just take down the pictures.
Yeah.
And not want to feel. And
yes. Yeah. Yeah. I know somebody like whose husband died and they can't even look at the pictures.
And then similarly, I guess your sister, though, too, it just mm-hmm. she wasn't talked about. That process didn't happen. So was it early on with after your husband's death that you're realizing, oh, I never processed Susie's?
No, it wasn't actually. It wasn't. I had a little bit of grief counseling at the beginning, which was tough because it was held in the hospice where he died and it was not the best energy for me to be there. So I stopped. And then last year, by the summer of last year, I'd kept working as a physio and I used to see six patients an hour a day, you know, an hour for each patient. Then I went to five, then I went to four, then I went to three. And I'm thinking, this is not good. I'm burning out here. Mm. I don't feel good. And I literally took myself away from work for a month and decided I'm stopping as a physio. I can't handle this and I need some help. So I went back to grief coaching, counseling, actually, not coaching. And we talked about this grief, that unresolved grief that had not ever been dealt with. And I thought, oh, I had no idea. Yeah. I had no idea.
Well, I'm thinking there are probably a lot of people who have no idea mm-hmm. of the grief that they're walking around with that yeah. will show up in surprising ways. How were you able to figure it out? Was it with talking to the grief counselor?
Yes.
Or...
Okay. Yeah, with talking to her, with talking mm-hmm. to her. Yeah. And the other thing about grief, of course, it's not always just the death of a loved one. It can be a divorce. It can be loss of job. It can be so many things. Change in life circumstances. One of my patients who's got a terrible pain in her foot, that's one of the worst types of pain they can get. It's like the grief of her quality of life, of what she used to be able to do. Yeah. So grief really does touch us all in different facets of our lives. And we need to talk about it, I think, so that we can maybe deal with it, be a bit more open with it, yeah. so that we can help others around us when they're going through that. Because we don't really know what to say. We don't really know how to support people. We're awkward about it. And yet yeah. we know it's going to happen.
We do. It's like that freight right? train coming, but then it's like the freight train's here and it's like we want to pretend it's not going by yeah. and we can still hear the train tracks, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you on grief can be about just about anything, you know. Mm-hmm. For me, my disability didn't come on until my late 30s.
Yeah.
And it's my hands. And yeah. so walking through the idea of what I was going to be as a mother, what I was going to be, you know, my kids were
yeah.
6 and 8.
Right, right.
And I don't know that I knew I was grieving because, yeah. and I don't know if it was even helpful because there was always, well, if we just do this, you'll be fixed. Or we just do this,
right.
you'll be fixed. If we just do that, does that same thing happen after a death? Oh, if we just do this, you'll feel better. If you just do this, you'll feel better.
I think people come up with suggestions like, well, just keep busy. Then you'll feel fine. Not so much though. I think there's that. I know people don't understand it, and who can until they live it. But I remember somebody saying to me, so are you over your grief at 6 months? And I said, no, no, not yet. No. And then somebody else said to me, isn't it just time that you let him go? I think, wow, how strange is that? Why would you let go of the memory of somebody you loved with all your heart? Why would yeah. you let that go? So we do all deal with it differently. And yeah, I mean, I had photos. I had tons of photos. It felt like a shrine, I have to say. And then I started to pull them down. So I just had one or two, but I felt like I wanted to be surrounded by him. That was my way of coping. Other people, as I said, are like, no photos, no thank you very much. Music was our language. We both loved music. And of course he did. I couldn't stand to play the piano for the last 4 years. Couldn't bear it. It was too emotional, reached into my soul, crushed my heart until I could. And now I can.
Yeah. And
who knows why? All of a sudden it's like, oh, now it's okay. There's no time for it. There isn't that time frame. And it's not like you're trying to stay in grief. I would say I worked pretty hard at work going through it with gratitude and walks and counseling and talking and beautiful friends, honoring his legacy, making a CD. I did the work. And yet yeah. it wasn't until I started feeling better. I'm like, oh, this is really what it feels to be like Carol again. I didn't really know.
So this was not a short journey then. It's not like someone passes yeah. away and 6 months later, you're fine. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like this has been for at least 4 years until you were able to sit at the piano again.
And yeah.
I'm not sure I want to know the answer to this question, but would you say you're ever totally done missing them, you know,
no,
with that grief?
No, of course. No, I would say, of course not. How can you be? But your life changes so that the grief isn't all encompassing. It's not what you're thinking about every day. It's not that the sad emotions, the oh, the heaviness and, you know, no. So grief is there. And sometimes you get something called a grief burst. You'll burst into tears for no reason. It may last 10 or 20 seconds, not long. And then you're good.
Interested in that, you know, 10, 20 seconds, then it's gone. So that would just come on. Would it be, was it just easy to let it, how do I want to explain this? Kind of go like a wave in the ocean through you. Was it easy? And at times, did you feel like, I just need to hold on to this wave for a little bit? The pain, because it of the...
I wanted to hold on to the pain. But for me, often, I actually, not only did I not play the piano, I didn't listen to music, because if I listened to music, because he played so many tunes, a tune would come on and poof, that would give me a bit of a grief burst. But sometimes it can be driving along, or it was, not now, driving along, and all of a sudden you cry. Like, oh, okay. And so often there are triggers. It might be a smell, it might be a sound, it might be a place that you've been. It may be watching a movie and somebody dies. Might be something sad, you know, but sometimes they come on, we just don't know when they're going to hit you, and they can come on quite, you know, randomly. But there was one thing I wanted to say about, 4.5 years, the average time for somebody to get over the loss of a significant loved one is 5 to 8 years. That's a long time. And so with the grief to gratitude coaching, which what I love is, because you're supporting somebody through that journey, you're hopefully quickening up the journey. You're helping them, saying, you know, this is natural. How do we move forward towards gratitude? And then hopefully you can find joy again. But if we just stay stuck in that grief, stuck in that grief, stuck in that grief, and not do any action, then it's hard to get out of it.
Yeah, it would be. Do you think there's anything society or anyone listening that they could do better at if they're around someone going through grief, or if they're going through grief themselves?
I think if you're around somebody with grief, and I didn't know this until I was the person in grief, it's be careful what you say to them. I know we all say, hey, how are you? That's what we say to each other. Probably not the best thing, because they're not really doing well and they don't really want to tell you. And they'll probably just say, well, I'm fine. But the other one is, don't say you understand. Oh, I understand how you feel. I lost my husband, or I lost my cat. I had that one. I had lost my cat. Whatever. You don't know how I feel. Maybe it's better to say, I can't imagine what you're feeling. So just thinking before you actually say anything, and sometimes don't say anything at all. Just take somebody's hand. Give them a hug if they're if you're close enough to do that. But actually, somebody did something really beautiful for me that really was such a gift. They paid for my grass to be cut all summer. And I'm like, wow, that was amazing. I didn't have to go out. I didn't have to think of it. So sometimes offering to do something, if you know somebody has young children, say, how about I always pick them up on a Wednesday after school for you? Or let me do your shopping. Give me a list. Because when we say, call me if you need me, we don't call.
I don't.
And we know it's no, right? We don't because we have to cope. But also you don't want to bother people. Whereas if somebody's a little bit more forward and says, hey, Angela, I'm going to pick your kids up, which day suits you best? Or can I take them to soccer? Or can I take them? It's like such a relief that somebody is offering to do that. That is super helpful. Yeah. And also even asking, saying, you know, do you want to talk? Because one of the things that can be challenging for other people is, should I say their name? Should I mention anything? Will it hurt them? And yet I read something, I think it was Gloria Vanderbilt who'd lost a child, and somebody said, I'm so sorry talking about them. And she's like, no, I love it. It keeps their memory alive. Please keep talking about them. And I felt that with Brian. People talked to me about him because in Ottawa, they knew him very well. So, you know, he's with me. I feel he's with me.
That's beautiful. I remember a gentleman came up to me at church, a good friend of mine, much older than me, but a good friend, and his brother had passed away. Yeah. And I think I can't remember what I said, but it turned into him telling me all these great things about what a wonderful brother he had had.
Yeah.
And
I just was really honored to be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
And to be there to listen. Sometimes
listening is the key.
Yeah. And I have actually stopped asking, how are you? I think my new go-to is, what's the most interesting thing that happened to you this week?
Yeah.
And
lovely.
People will tell me, you know, I had somebody, I was on a street epistemology practice session, and someone was worried because they were like, I don't like asking, how are you? I don't like small talk. And I was like, well, what do you want to know about someone? And he said all these fascinating things. And I was like, use that. You know how many people want to answer that question over,
yes,
how are you?
That's a great question. That's a great question. And the other thing you can do for somebody is say, you know what? I have such beautiful memories of when whoever it was did X, Y, Z, or just sharing a beautiful memory about that person. It just, it's heartwarming for the person who's grieving. But yeah, I think we have to talk about it. We have to tell people, yeah, it's okay to talk about them, but it isn't always, though. I say that, but some people might be, I don't want to talk about it. So you have to ask, do you want to talk? No, I'd rather not. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Ask, ask
permission. Ask first, because not everybody's the same.
No. Yeah. It's a matter of feeling out the situation. Mm-hmm. I am so glad I got to have you on the show to talk about grief, processing grief, and just this last little part I've really enjoyed about brainstorming on different ways to, well, you have some fantastic ideas, and then, but the different ways of talking to someone.
Yeah.
And it, I don't think it matters if it's grief, from what I'm getting from you. It could be grief about anything. It could be grief about a trauma experience.
Yes.
Anything. Anything.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Well, thank you, Carol Bannons. You can find Carol at carolbannons.com. Her other social media links will be in the doobly-doo down below. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Hey, everyone. Angela Talent here, host of the Relatively Damaged podcast. I'm the author of Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent. As you may know, Cicero once said, a room without books is like a body without a soul. Well, I say a soul without poetry hasn't lived. Buy my book on Amazon, Poems from a Lost Soul by Angela Talent.
Do you feel like a meditation failure? I know I did until I tried the iOS Breath and Heart app put together by the good people over at the Institute for Applied Meditation. I kept hearing about the benefits of meditation and was frustrated because I just couldn't sit there noticing my breath for any length of time. Thank goodness there's more than one type of meditation. I'm so glad this worked for me. Will it work for you? I don't know. Download the app and try it out. Breath and Heart from I Am Heart. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Relatively Damaged by Damaged Parents. We really enjoyed talking to Carol about how she processed her grief. We especially liked when she explained how everyone is different and sometimes small things bring on the tears. And it's okay. To unite with other damaged people, connect with us on Instagram. Look for Damaged Parents. We'll be here next week, still relatively damaged. See you then.